Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:38 PM that is Central Time. Today is March 21st. And I thought we'd kick off today with a 10-year yield. It's up 14 basis points. So any chance that the oversold position that we were seeing last week was going to give way to a short covering rally has certainly dissipated in here today. And a good part of the reason for that is because as expected, the negotiations between Russia and Ukraine aren't going anywhere. All we need to do is look at the map, and Russia is attempting to encircle and lay siege to basically the entire country of Ukraine. So they initially went through a blitzkrieg type of operation to try and secure as much in territory as possible. They've been held up in various cities, but if we look at the progression, they've successfully taken over the vast majority of the Black Sea coast and are securing cities along the way. So once they then overtake Mariupol, they'll probably move on to Odessa. So Odessa has got cultural significance, and I don't think there's any real appetite for shelling the city. They would much prefer to acquiesce, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to shell it. And if they feel like it's going to achieve their objectives, that's what they'll go ahead and do. And basically what they're trying to do is to cut off the supply route for reinforcements to enter Ukraine. So if they can't come in by sea, and they can't come in from the east or the north, well then they'll have to come in via the west, and carpet bombing the west of the country would then certainly hamper the efforts of the west NATO countries to supply the resistance. So that would appear to be what Russia's ambition is, and of course nothing has happened to really change that. And when they said that Mariupol should just be conceded to them, well, obviously the Ukrainians shot back and said no. So we're seeing bond yields continue to march higher because oil prices are continuing to march higher. And oil today was up approximately $7 and certainly bouncing from this $100 area. Now, there's obviously a lot of discussion going on right now about what's the most logical historical comparison. Well, it would be easy to say that it's 1973, because that was the time when there was a real oil shock and the Arab states cut off supply. So instead of Russia cutting off supply, we're voluntarily deciding not to buy their oil. But when you've got a spread of between the Urals medium and Brent of $20, well, that's going to create demand from someone. Someone's going to bust the sanctions, or that differential is a sanction buster on its own. So you've got countries like India buying Russian oil just because they need to try and contain inflationary pressures domestically. And as a major importer with very few domestic sources of oil, they don't really have an awful lot of choice. Then wheat prices are also continuing to push higher here, and they were up 53 cents in here today. So certainly steadying here in the region of the 1,000 p or cent level, I should say. But this is really looking like a consolidation in the region of the all-time peak from back in 2008. So we've certainly got a really spectacular advance over the course of the last few weeks, and this really doesn't look like much more than a consolidation. It's not like we're about to see a massive swell of new supply hitting the market, and it's unlikely that wheat prices are going to come back down until there's an end to the hostilities in Ukraine. But when we think about what the panic is going on, and there's certainly evidence of panic right now, we haven't seen this kind of acceleration in fertilizer prices, and indeed fertilizer shares, since 2008. And there was a lot of fear that the world would run out of food back in 2007 and 8. But back then it was about demand increasing, and right now it's about a supply shortage. Well, demand increasing is, and it was on the assumption that, and we can, I guess, look back on it now, and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but when the price was accelerating in 2007 and all the way through the middle of 2008, people really did think that we were going to see a significant deterioration in price, in the ability of people to buy food, and that with rising living standards all over the world and the rise of the middle class in the emerging markets with billions of mouths to feed, that was going to contribute to an inability of the world to feed the population. It was also exactly the same time that there were significant fears about the world running out of oil. And it's worth just looking at the performance of the solar ETF up there in 2008. So it really only came into existence at the peak of the market and then promptly crashed. But there were real fears that the world would run out of oil. So we're not in that exact same situation today. We're in a different scenario. Now, when we think about what's pushing inflationary pressures right now, and it's obviously taking a toll on the bond market, it's also pushing up the dollar. So with the real potential that we're looking at inflationary pressures remaining relevant for much of the rest of the year. A lot of it has to do with the quantity of money that was printed during the pandemic. We've had trillions of dollars printed, and all of that happened before the invasion of Ukraine. So we're certainly dealing with the ramifications of that because there's a time delay between when money is created and inflationary pressures show up. So that's what we're looking at right now. But will the supply chain problems are insensitive to interest rates? So we would definitely need to see a significant change in how supply chains are managed. And then the only thing that interest rates will have an impact on is demand. Now, there's a tendency to think that the way that Paul Volcker was able to quell inflation in the late 1970s, which was towards the end of the inflationary cycle, was by jacking up interest rates. But it's also worth remembering that he wasn't facing a supply shortage. He wasn't facing the kind of problems that we have today, which are much more akin to the oil shock in the 1970s. Now, the Fed funds rate did rise during the oil shock, and as soon as prices started to come back down, they cut interest rates aggressively. I've been of the view that they wouldn't be able to raise rates more than once and perhaps at most twice. And the reason for that is because of the massive quantity of outstanding debt. So we didn't have the same debt burden in the 1970s either. But certainly there was more debt than there had been in previous decades, and not least because of the social spending that took place in the late 1960s in response to social unrest. So in that regard, this is similar. So we saw a lot of money creation in response to social unrest and fears about significant social unrest that's contributing to inflationary pressures. Now we're seeing the commodity price response. Perhaps most importantly, the commodity price response isn't over. It's we're still seeing prices rise. So this is not quite 1973, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to get there. And they might have to raise interest rates. They might have no choice but to raise interest rates. If that is the case, well, then stock markets are going to decline. And the dollar remains firm because we're looking this year at fiscal stimulus being eroded. So that's fiscal constraint, which is obviously dollar bullish. If the US government isn't going to print money at the same pace as it has been for the last couple of years, by definition, that's fiscal constraint. Whether it translates into balanced budgets is an entirely different matter. Then, when we get to what the Federal Reserve is doing, they're raising interest rates, and now they're also beginning, or at least starting to talk about, balance sheet runoff or quantitative tightening. And quantitative tightening this time around is expected to be faster than the last time. So that's withdrawing dollars from circulation. So on the one hand, you have the government spending fewer, and you have the central bank producing less. And that is going to contribute to dollar strength, which is why the dollar remains really quite firm. So we're in an environment where the stock market has been reasonably steady. And the S&P 500 finished out the day pretty much flat. And it has so far held this move back above the 200-day moving average. And it has broken the short-term sequence of lower rally highs. And the S&P, of course, is loaded with very large cap companies. And the Russell 2000, which is the small caps, is distributing below the 200-day moving average and the overhead trading range. So this doesn't, it, I mean, we had a big upper dynamic last week, and that's certainly encouraging, but it needs to do more than that to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So far, companies have successfully been able to raise prices, and we're starting to see pushback, particularly from politicians. So politicians are beginning to voice the concerns of their constituents in saying that corporate profits are at record levels and inflationary pressures are occurring because companies have been jacking up their prices. We can definitely think about how successful companies like Ford or GM or Volkswagen have been in raising prices. And they've been able to report some of their best years ever, despite the fact that they're producing as many as a million cars less. So they are jacking up prices, and that's contributing to margin expansion, despite the fact that they're suffering from significant supply chain issues. Now, we're also seeing that these companies are making serious money on their financing sectors because they're taking back leased cars and they get to turn around and sell them at a significant premium. So that's certainly beneficial to the bottom line. Then people are taking out car loans and the price of the cars that they're buying are more expensive. So that's also contributing to their bottom lines. One does wonder, however, how long that is going to persist for. The one thing that I saw, I was reading an article today about Volkswagen and how successful their financing arm has been. And Volkswagen's share price has pulled back really rather sharply over the course of the last while. In fact, it peaked more than a year ago. So the price hasn't quite halved, but it's not that far off it either. And this is on the back of record profits. So are we potentially now starting to see some issues? Because rising interest rates mean that car payments will rise. Rising interest rates mean that mortgage payments rise. Oil price appreciation means that energy prices are rising. Food commodity inflation means that food prices are rising. And wages might be rising quickly, but they're not rising quickly enough. So this is obviously a significant issue. Companies get to raise prices at the beginning of an inflationary cycle. That's when they have the least resistance to price increases. But then the question is, are they going to be able to continue to raise those prices? And if bond yields continue to march higher, then that is going to start putting pressure on some companies. Not every company is going to be in a position that they can raise rates, raise prices indefinitely. The one redeeming quality for the Fangman plus Tesla sector is that the larger companies have significant cash moats, and the Fangman index has rebounded over the course of the last couple of weeks, and it's now back in the region of the 200-day moving average. So companies like Apple, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, and they have, and I guess Facebook, have got some of the largest cash piles of any companies. So they're in a position that they can invest those that cash pile and earn at least a decent return on it, and it insulates them somewhat from the ravages of inflation. They also get to raise prices, and because they have almost monopolistic characteristics, then they get to insulate their cash flows as well. So these very large tech companies like Microsoft, well, Microsoft has its 365, and anyone who has it can't really do without it. So if they raise prices by 5%, is anyone really going to be able to avoid paying it? Perhaps they can then just go and use Google's spreadsheet or Google Docs and not pay anything for them. But how much of a price hike would it take for people to make that migration? So these are considerations for further on down the road. We just don't see these exact same kinds of price pressures or decisions arising from price pressures coming up at the beginning of an inflationary cycle. These tend to happen over time. And that, of course, means that corporate profits will not be able to continue to trend higher at such an aggressive level if inflationary pressures persist. Well, obviously, bond yields marching higher like this are certainly something that should start to have an impact. And we are seeing that some of the liquidity measures are beginning to tighten further. So the TED spread is up to about 51 basis points in here, right in the region of the peaks from back in 2017 and in 2018. So those were also times of stress in the market, but then the spread started to come back down. Well, we're seeing a little pause right now. So if it were to then start pushing up through the 60 basis point level, that would be representative of some stress evident in the financial sector. We saw in here today that Warren Buffett bought Allegheny, and that's an insurance company. But there's also Allegheny, which is the. I'm going to try and remember the ticker. Yes, Allegheny Technology, which is a steel company. And I do wonder whether people saw the name and then started to pay more attention to steel companies. We saw that ATI started to push higher in here in early trading. Cleveland Cliffs also started to push higher in here today as well, and coming up out of this first step above the base. US Steel remains in a clear recovery and is pushing up towards the peaks from back in 2014, 17, and 18. And ArcelorMittal is coming back up to test the upper side of its base formation. So we're certainly seeing more interest in steel, more interest in copper, and anything relating to the resources sector. People, of course, one of the primary ways of dealing with inflation is to make trade flow easier. So we need to have clear measures put in place to try and create resilience in the global supply chain. That means building. It means certainly employing more people, investing in more ways of automating processes, and then also creating more options in terms of energy production. So that also points towards renewable energy. And against all that, it needs to be done on a budget because bond yields are rising. So that's going to have a significant impact on how much money and the price that people have to pay for that money. What it then suggests is that we're going to have to see credit facilities created by governments. In other words, by one way or another, it looks increasingly likely that as interest rates rise, then governments offering guarantees to companies so that they go off and build the infrastructure will be how credit decisions are made. And that basically translates into governments taking over the lending facilities of banks, which is another form of financial repression. So gold prices are also still steadying here, and we're holding today around the $1,935 area. This looks like a pause in the region of $1,900. It's the upper side of the underlying range. It's a natural area where we might anticipate some support starting to come through, and it's looking increasingly likely that that is exactly what's happening. Last week, we saw that AMC bought a gold mine. So AMC has been through the ringer over the course of the last 2 years, but they're investing some of their cash in a basically an explorer gold mine. What it also helps to highlight is that the sector has been starved of capital, and there are plenty of projects out there that offer a lot of leverage to the rising gold and silver prices. So gold shares continue to steady from the region of the 1,000 and 200-day moving averages. The GDX ETF is steadying around the $40 area, and it doesn't look like anything other than a brief pause. If we take a big step back and we think about defensive sectors, the time in the cycle when defensive sectors do best is usually late cycle because there's still the willingness to think that we're going to see a lot of spending, and it's the kinds of companies that do well in an uncertain environment. They also tend to have strong franchises, so they also tend to outperform, and we're seeing companies like miners doing really quite well. And BHP Billiton is continuing to push on the upside. S32, which was spun off from BHP, all of its alumina and coal assets, is also doing really quite well. And this outperformance of commodity shares in an environment where interest rates are rising and bond yields are accelerating higher. That's really quite defensive. And we tend to see strong outperformance of the resources sector in the latter stages of bull markets. So, as long as this trend remains consistent, we give it the benefit of the doubt. But the resources sector is unlikely to peak first. So we also need to pay attention to the wider stock market. And if these rebounds that we saw last week do not hold, then the accelerations that we're seeing in the commodity complex need to be monitored exceedingly closely. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.